When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Swish and Flick, the Felix Files.
The Felix Files.
The Felix Files.
The Felix Files.
Well, how do you feel?
Excellent. Really excellent.
Hello and welcome to the Felix Files. I'm Tiffany.
I'm Megan.
And I'm Katie.
And we are joined by a very special patron guest host today, Patrizia. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
Hi. We are so excited to have you joining us from
Switzerland. I remember.
It blows my mind.
It is a late hour.
My mind.
For this wonderful person. Yes. And she is here.
That's dedication. So we truly, truly thank you for joining us today.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. So, in light of the season that we are in currently, sorry, future listeners, this might not apply, but we are going to discuss some magical moments in Harry Potter's life, such as his back to school letter and trip to Diagon Alley for the first time, because it's back to school season.
Yes, woo-hoo! It is. Ooh. And guess who's going back to school? None of us.
Not me, baby.
I am.
Oh no.
Never mind.
Yeah, I don't go back until October 19th, I believe. So that's cool. But that's enough about me. Let's talk about Harry Potter. So it's back to school season. And I have to bring this up because it's such a millennial thing. Do you guys remember that Staples commercial that had it's the most wonderful time of the year, but they had it at back to school and it was the parents going through the aisles like so happy they're sending their kids back to school.
I do remember that.
Remember that?
Yeah.
RIP, a lot of Staples. We love you. See you never. All right. Patrizia, let's get to know you. Give us your Potter profile, please.
All right. I'm a Gryffindor.
I'm happy about that.
What a surprise. Yeah, I always knew, but I also did the quiz and I always got, I think in the first one I got Hufflepuff, but it didn't feel right. And then when they gave out the second one or whatever, they redid it, right? And then
yeah.
I got Gryffindor. I was like, yeah, that's right.
We'll still give you snacks for being an honorary Hufflepuff.
Well, that's nice.
It would probably be like the second most fitting, but yeah. And I actually had to go look up what my wand was because I've never really used Pottermore. I really just did the whole quiz and then dipped out of there.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even called that anymore. So, but I had to go look it up. I did remember that my Patronus is a salmon because it's such an odd thing.
Mm-hmm. That's neat. Mm-hmm. I think that's cool.
Swimming salmon upstream. Are actually really cool. Yeah.
And they're delicious.
Yeah, that was kind of my reaction. It's like, oh, I'll eat it. I don't know if it's gonna protect me, but sure. And yeah, so my wand apparently is like Hawthorn, mm-hmm. unicorn core, 11 inches, unbending flexibility. But yeah, like I said, so I didn't even remember. I won't remember after tonight. Yeah, I got into Harry Potter. I don't actually remember first getting into it. I've been told that the first time I saw the first movie was at like a New Year's Eve showing they held at a cinema close to here, just right after it came out. But I don't remember. I would have been 5 at the time, I think. But I know we watched the movies all the time when I was younger, like with a whole bunch of neighborhood kids. We'd like get together and watch them. I remember watching the fourth one and thinking it was really scary because we like made the room really dark and there's a thunderstorm outside. And I remember watching the second one and closing my eyes all every time that the basilisk was on screen because I thought if I looked into its eyes, I was going to die.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Took quite a while to figure that one out. But I really got into it when I watched the fifth one at the movie theater. So I would have been right, like just turned 11, actually. And coming home and thinking it was such a good movie that I came home and I was like, oh, Mom, I want to read the books. We got to buy these books. And she's like, we have 4 of them right here. I've read all of them. I'm like, oh, okay.
So, wow.
Yeah. And then I like read through the ones that were out. Was it all, not all of them though? I think the 7th one wasn't out yet, maybe in the 6th, I don't remember. Or it wasn't out in German, actually. I think it might have been out in English already, but the translation usually comes out a couple months later, and we didn't have the 6th book yet, so we had to buy that, and then the 7th one wasn't out yet. I think that was how it went. And I read through the ones that were out and we had so fast that I actually went back to the movie theater and watched the 5th movie again and thought it was garbage.
Oh, no, Max, I was cover your ears. Common.
Sorry.
That's okay. It's quite a common thing to not like that movie. I understand. And if I was purely looking at it based on like the comparison of the book to the movie, it's a terrible, terrible
adaptation.
Yeah. It's just when I felt that way about a lot of the movies. So like after so long, I just really had to take a step back and look at them individually and like not even think about the book, which can be really hard. And some people can't do that. And that's totally valid. So like the only reason why I love the 5th one is because I truly don't even think about the book. If I start thinking about the book, it's bad. But I just love like the visuals of it and the music. Like that's when I feel like the music started to change a little bit. Music. Like you had like the classic John Williams, like 1, 2, and 3. 4 was kind of like the music was good, but like meh. Like 5 and 6, I loved the music. So I think that played a big role in me liking it too. Plus, I feel like a lot of the design elements from Mina Lima are like very prominent in 5 with like the newspapers and stuff, which are another aspect I really like about it. But again, like if you're thinking about it as like an adaption, it's terrible. So like no offense taken.
No, like I'll watch it all the time too. It's not that I don't watch it. It's just I think it was just such a big disparity between, you know, loving it, going home, reading all the books, going back and thinking now I'm going to understand everything and love it even more and just thinking, oh, never mind.
And, oh, I ruined that for myself.
Yes, exactly. And I think the 7th book came out a couple months later or something in German, like I said. And so my mom only wanted to buy one copy for the house, and my brother wanted to read the last 2 books as well because he didn't want to wait for the movies. And so she bought the books for him for whatever reason, and I was so mad because I was like, I'm much faster reader than my brother. And so I was like, and like I have to wait so long until he's finished. And she ended up saying, like, as long as he doesn't realize I'm reading the book at the same time as he does, she doesn't care. So I had to like read it like really carefully and make sure like not folding it all the way, even though it was a hardcover, so I don't even know why I had to be that careful, but it was like just making sure he doesn't realize that I've already read the book and was finished much faster than him. And yeah, I don't know, it just went on from there. It was just, I reread them all the time, was constant companion through puberty, while everything else was changing, Harry Potter stayed the same. And yeah, I don't know. Read them for the first time in English during my exchange year because my host family had all of the books in English. Don't really read them in German anymore now because I'm used to it that way around. Yeah. Not that interesting, but it's
yes, it is. What are you talking about? Yes,
it absolutely is.
It absolutely is. Every single story I want to hear. And every single story people don't think their story is interesting. I think it's fantastic.
It's honestly, it's kind of cool though, like when there are stories that like are similar to other people's, like it's interesting to see how many are like that, to like see how many people have the same path and all that kind of stuff. So like it's not, it doesn't make it boring. It just like adds to the, I've been so bad with like words lately. I don't know what my problem is. It adds to like the data is kind of what I like, you know, like it's like, oh yeah, like another story that's like this. It's just like, cool. It's not, mm-hmm. It's not boring.
I love you.
I don't know.
Also, I find it super interesting that like you almost don't know a world without Potter. It's like super close. Mm-hmm. Like you don't even remember seeing it because it's just been a part of your life. That's really cool.
That is cool.
Yeah. I mean, especially the movies. I do remember like picking up the books for the first time, but the movies were just there.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Actually, yeah. I had to like rebuy the first DVD because we wore it out.
I love that. All right. So we're going to go into starting out with like the contents of the Hogwarts acceptance letter. I also brought in like the differences in the shopping lists, like based on books. I know that like, I hope that this doesn't mess like with anything else in the next Felix files, because I know that like she, like the way that Tiff made this doc is that like today is supposed to be like his first trip. But
you know what? I'm just roll with gonna it. Go just with it. Go with so, it. It's fine.
Okay, so lovely. The Wikia literally has the letter for me to read. I didn't even have to look through the book, which is fantastic.
Thanks, Wiki.
Right. So obviously the Hogwarts acceptance letter is the letter that is sent to British wizards and witches prior to their first year at Hogwarts. The way that they know that students are going to get this letter is because of the special quill that existed, which wrote down the name of every magical child in Britain at the time of their birth. And this allowed Hogwarts letters to be sent to all magical children at the appropriate time, even those who were muggle-born. So it literally just notices your magical qualities and not necessarily like a family you're born into, if that makes sense. It's not like the parents have to like look out. It's just like the quill knows, which is kind of cool.
This is really neat.
The Hogwarts letter consists of a note of acceptance from the deputy headmaster or headmistress of Hogwarts. So in the case, whenever Harry was attending, that was Professor McGonagall. And this note was written in green ink and was accompanied by a list of required textbooks and materials for the upcoming school year. And then like going forward from that, the letters were mostly just required texts and materials for the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth year. And then as well, like as we get into the later books, it's like that's how you find out if you get prefect or if you get head boy or head girl or if you're Quidditch captain or something like that. You like find out with your Hogwarts letter. So the very first time Harry ever gets his letter, we know about the mayhem of his letter delivery. It's normally just delivered by owl, except in the case of Muggleborns, when a student is Muggleborn, the acceptance letter is delivered in person by a member of the Hogwarts faculty, and they act as a special messenger who explains everything to the student and the parents.
Can you imagine if like Snape, you got to sign Snape?
I was just going to ask that, like, which faculty members do you think handle this? I'm sure that McG helps out.
Do you think it's like one of those things where like, it's just like, it's every year is different. Like, okay, on this year, it's these three people. Next year, it's going to be these three people. And they just keep going on and off. Or is it the
heads of houses? In which case, Snape probably doesn't have to do very many, because how many Muggleborns get sorted into Slytherin?
Well, so actually, they would have to do the visits before that. Yeah. But how many Muggleborns are there each year?
True.
Like, is it even that many trips? And they're like spread out over, or do they get their first letter when they turn 11, right? Or is that just with Harry? Because
I think that it's just a coincidence that he got his, because they do say that. I can't remember where I read that, but I did read that somewhere, that like Harry did happen to get it on his birthday and so did McGonagall, but that doesn't necessarily mean that people get it, because then Hermione would have gotten it like the previous September, and that's kind of like weird. Or like Ron would have gotten it in March.
I
think that it just happens over the summer.
How coincidental and amazing to be the chosen one.
Get it on your birthday.
Yeah.
So Harry's... get it
before you turn 11, usually. No, after. Most people would get it after.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, most people get it after. And then the people who... it would really just be people with summer birthdays that might get it on or before.
Do you have to be you have to be 11 by the start of term, or by the end of that year?
By the start of term. By September 1st, you have to be 11.
But isn't Hermione's birthday in September?
Yep, that's why she's older than everybody.
That's right. Okay, thank you.
She's like almost a year older.
My brain stopped working. Okay, you can continue now.
Which means that on September 11th of her first year, she turns 12.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
So Harry's initial letter was delivered by Muggle Post. However, it gets burned and then many more arrive. They just got a bombardment of letters. However, none of them got opened or read by anybody. And the only reason Harry got his was thanks to Hagrid at the Hut on the Rock. So the first page says at the top, it's got a little header. This is Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Headmaster Albus Dumbledore, Order of Merlin, First Class, Grand Sorcerer, Chief Warlock, Supreme Mugwump, International Confederation of Wizards.
Mugwump.
Dear Mr. Miss, last name. We are pleased to inform you that you've been accepted at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Please find enclosed a list of all necessary books and equipment. Term begins on the 1st of September. We await your owl by no later than the 31st of July. So I'm guessing that means all letters must be delivered before the end of July so that they have time to respond.
Which explains why they sent Hagrid on Harry's birthday, because they needed the response.
Yeah. There we go. See, we figured it out. We just had to talk it out to figure out the statistics here.
They were like,
logistics. I mean,
that Potter kid, we like want him at our school. Go see what's up.
Yours sincerely, Minerva McGonagall, Deputy Headmistress. So that's page one. The second page is the list, and this is much longer. So bear with me. Again, at the top, it's like stationary for Hogwarts. So it says Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Uniform. First year students will require 3 sets of plain work robes in black, 1 plain pointed hat, black for day wear, 1 pair of protective gloves, dragon hide or similar, 1 winter cloak, black with silver fastenings. Please note that all pupils' clothes should carry name tags. Also, fun fact that I wanted to point out, Chris Rankin told us at one of our panels that we went to for LeakyCon that the reason why they only had the hats for one movie was because at the end, whenever they had them throw them all up in like joy that Gryffindor won, a bunch of them landed in the fires.
Still not funny, but it is. It's only like, funny because I don't think anyone got hurt.
Yeah. So because they had there's a couple places where there is fire in the Great Hall. So like you have the statues that are like holding these like torches kind of. And then they also have like fireplaces. And like they went mostly in like the torches. Like
they had actual fires on that set then for those pieces.
That's Chris Columbus, man. He said it was
actual
real
fire.
Stuff.
That was also like, the same movie where they actually lit candles for a shot that hovering
over.
And it like dripped down on the people or something, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is definitely one thing that I absolutely adore about Chris Columbus is he was very much a, and he's like that in a lot of the movies that he's done. He wants real effects over CGI. It's just how he, it's just how he's always worked.
Practical or bust.
Yeah. That was really cool. The one time back in the day when they still had the celebration of Harry Potter at Universal Orlando, they had the door that they used in Sorcerer's Stone for that shot the letters out for filming. It was like actual, it was like practical, and they showed it to us. Like they would bring a group of people in and then they would demonstrate it and they would like have all the letters loaded in there and they would like shoot them out. It was like so
through
cool.
The mail slot.
Yeah.
The one that we're going, okay.
We're yeah. Like slot? Privet Drive's front door.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And that was really cool.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Let's see. What else do they need? Course books is next. So all students should have a copy of each of the following: the Standard Book of Spells, Grade 1, by Miranda Goshawk; A History of Magic by Bathilda Bagshot; Magical Theory by Adalbert Waffling. And these names just make me laugh. Like, so that is like the first one. Adalbert Waffling, because like...
Get it. It's Waffling, a very German theory. Name.
Is it?
Yeah, you'd say Adalbert.
I like that.
A Beginner's Guide to Transfiguration by Emmerich Switch. Again, get it.
Transfiguring, oh,
switching. 1000 Magical Herbs and Fungi by Philida Spore.
See, now the name shouldn't have had fungi in it, and it should have been like the last name should have been Fun Guy. You know what I mean? Like a fun guy.
Isn't Spore also a pun though?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just wanted it to be different.
Sorry.
Magical Drafts and Potions by Arsenius Jigger. Like, I kind of think like
Jiggers.
I think of like arsenic, you know, like poison. But yeah, Jigger, like Slug and Jigger's The Store, right? Is like an apothecary in Diagon Alley. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them by Newt Scamander. Yes.
Isn't that thing that you measure like adult beverages called a jigger too?
Yeah, I think it is.
So it's kind of like creating potions, like and specific measurements and stuff. I just thought of that.
The Dark Forces, A Guide to Self-Protection by Quentin Trimble.
Because he's trembling because it's Dark Forces.
Squirrel's book.
Yeah. That is funny, for actually, real? Because that would be the book that he would use to teach, because that was him teaching. Other equipment: 1 wand, 1 cauldron, pewter, standard size 2, 1 set of glass or crystal files, 1 telescope, and 1 set of brass scales.
What if some kid rolled up and had everything but a wand? It's like the kid that shows up without a pencil. I don't have a wand. What do I do?
What would they do?
I don't know.
Sorry, Tommy. You got to go
probably
back
not to... get him a new one, considering Ron had to use his broken one for an entire year.
Right, true. But Harry Potter gets a brand new Nimbus 2000. Whatever.
Of course, it's the Potter effect.
Right, maybe. I know. Forget Ronald Weasley.
Students may also bring, if they desire, an owl or a cat or a toad. And or is capitalized.
So that's why Ron gets picked on, because he brought
a rat.
That's, you couldn't follow the instructions.
Yeah. Way to not follow the rules. Parents are reminded that first years are not allowed their own broomstick. Yours sincerely, Lucinda Tommensickle Pocus, Chief Attendant of Witchcraft Provisions.
Hold now, on. That's really who is on there?
Yes.
How have I never known that?
I just assumed it was McGonagall. Until I went to go and do my notes, and Tiffany had told me I needed to talk about this lady. So let's talk about her.
My world is rocked.
Lucinda Tommensickle Pocus was a witch. She was the Chief Attendant of Witchcraft Provisions for Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry in the early 90s. As such, the students' required supplies lists were signed by her. That's pretty much all we know.
How do you have a name like Tommensickle Pocus, and that's all I know about you?
I don't know. It also says the appearance of this name is only in the Harry Potter films and mentioned on harrypotter.com.
Weird. So it's not in the book.
No.
So that's why I don't know.
It is on the Hogwarts acceptance letter at harrypotter.com, though.
I don't know why harrypotter.com is really funny to me. It just sounds funny.
Yeah.
Is there just nothing at the end of the list then in the book?
I think it's not signed. It's just supposed to be a supply list. I don't know why they decided to create this this job someone.
You know what's strange about that is, like, I was kind of under the impression that whoever is teaching at that time assigns the books that they want their students to have, right?
Well, I assume that they do, but they just have to tell them before the letters get sent out.
So this person puts that all together and then signs it and sends it out. Okay.
Correct.
They might have to approve them or something. I don't know.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. She can stay, I guess.
You know, it's kind of like we have a friend who is a teacher in Florida, and her kids cannot get this, guys. Her kids cannot borrow or read any books in any classroom library or school library, probably until January, because every book in there needs to be read and approved to make sure it doesn't mention critical race theory or anything about being gay. So
Florida has become a dumpster fire.
Yep. Yep.
Anyway.
I just checked the doc for the next episode, and I am not stepping on toes here by diving into the shopping lists for the other books. So
proud of you.
I'm going with it.
Okay.
Okay. So as we know, the shopping list is given to students before their first term starting in September, listing what they need for that year. I just went over the first year one. For third years, one thing that is added into the letters is the Hogsmeade forms. Sixth years, they'll receive their OWL results. And then also in fifth year they become prefix?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Fifth year, you find out if you're a prefect, and also some year, it doesn't matter what year, I would assume, but if they need a new Quidditch captain, you find out then, because Harry gets that in sixth year. Okay. In the second year, the books that we know of that are added are Standard Book of Spells Grade 2 by Miranda Goshawk, and then all of the Gilderoy Lockhart books. Break with a Banshee, Gadding with Ghouls, Holidays with Hags, Travels with Trolls, Voyages with Vampires, Wanderings with Werewolves, and Year with the Yeti.
I just realized the wonderful alliteration of those, so yep. Shout out to Gilderoy for that.
Yep.
But, like, this was literally just a way for him to make more money.
Oh, totally. His
kids didn't need all those freaking books.
Absolutely.
You just wanted to boast about this stuff you didn't do.
Maybe that's why they need it listed in the Tom Sonical Pocus. Maybe she wasn't there after first year and didn't. No one was there to make sure that you know, someone's checking those books on that list.
That or Gilderoy Lockhart came in and flashed his little Witch Weekly, however many times, winner smiles. Yeah, and she was like, "Okay, I'll approve it."
Oh my gosh. Third year students require Standard Book of Spells Grade 3 by Miranda Goshawk.
I'm shocked.
Unfogging the Future by Cassandra Vablatsky, if you're studying divination. Intermediate Transfiguration by Emmerich Switch. The Monster Book of Monsters, if you are studying Care of Magical Creatures.
Does it say who wrote that?
No, it doesn't. I know. I was kind of hoping it would, but it doesn't.
I'm going to see if I can find it.
Numerology and Grammatica, if you're studying Arithmancy. Home Life and Social Habits of British Muggles by Wilhelm Wigworthy, if studying Muggle Studies. Spellman's Syllabary, if you're studying the study of ancient runes. And The Essential Defense Against the Dark Arts by Arsenius Jigger. Same dude. Actually, hold on. He wrote a defense book, but in first year he wrote the potions book. So that's interesting. Oh. So I don't know. Just, interesting. Fourth year, the only book we know of that's added is the Standard Book of Spells Grade 4 by Miranda Goshawk. Do you guys see a theme here? She's required every year.
I wonder what five will be.
And dress robes.
Mm-hmm.
As we know, because of the Yule Ball. Fifth year, the Standard Book of Spells, Grade 5 by Miranda Goshawk.
What?
What a shocker.
Right?
What a gosh shocker.
Defensive Magical Theory by Wilbert Slinkhard. Sixth year. Now, this one actually is longer because we have all those NEWT classes. So there's a whole slew of new books. So we do also have, though, the Standard Book of Spells, Grade 6 by Miranda Goshawk, Advanced Potion Making by Labatius Barrage, Confronting the Faceless if you're studying Newt Level Defense Against the Dark Arts, A Guide to Advanced Transfiguration by Emmerich Switch if you're studying Newt Level Transfiguration.
Good old Emmerich.
Advanced Rune Translation by Yuri Blishin for Newt Level Study of Ancient Runes, and Flesh Eating Trees of the World if studying Newt Level Herbology. Interesting.
Sounds like Newt Level Herbology is a fun class. Right.
The only book that we know of for seventh year, it's the Standard Book of Spells, Grade 7 by Miranda Goshawk.
Get out of here. How do we know that that is one?
I think they're assuming.
They're just going by process of elimination.
Yeah. Oh, it says based on Pottermore.
Okay.
So yeah. No,
through and through.
That is all I got.
Oh, that's funny.
That's all I got. And we are going to just go to Patrizia's section.
Yeah, all let's right. talk about Diane Alley.
Woohoo! So, let me just.
You got fun little... shops.
You did get fun shops. Okay. Let me just, sorry, before we go in, I'm just going to read Tiffany's little intro to Diane Alley shops so that it seems a little less random because we're reorganizing because Tiff's being a mom right now. Diagon Alley shops, Harry Potter's early visits. So this is a quote from the book. There were shops selling robes, shops selling telescopes, and strange silver instruments Harry had never seen before. Windows stacked with barrels of bat spleens and eel's eyes, tottering piles of spell books, quills, and rolls of parchment, potion bottles, globes of the moon. Harry Potter's first visit to Diagon Alley with Rubeus Hagrid marked his reintroduction to the Wizarding World on the 31st of July, 1991, his 11th birthday. Okay.
Perfect.
Now we can go into your section.
Okay, so I got Florian Fortescue's as my first shop, and I looked up what they wrote about the shop on the wiki. And it just says that Florian Fortescue's ice cream parlor was a shop that sold ice cream.
What?
And it was owned and operated by Florian Fortescue before he disappeared in 1996 at the beginning of Half-Blood Prince is when that is mentioned. And I went through the books and realized that the ice cream shop's actually not named or even mentioned specifically until Prisoner of Azkaban.
Oh, yeah.
So in the first book, Hagrid shows up with an ice cream cone while Harry and Draco are in the rope shop getting their ropes fitted. And he holds an ice cream up for Harry. And then in the second book, it says that Harry bought three cones of strawberry and peanut butter ice cream. They're a random combination. But so the first time that it's actually mentioned is in the beginning of the fourth chapter of Prisoner of Azkaban. And I also thought that the character was mentioned more often. I don't know why, but just because it's one of those shops that everybody knows.
Yeah.
And I went and checked, and I don't know where the source is for this Sporkle quiz, but there's this one Sporkle quiz that does the 200 most mentioned Harry Potter characters, right? And he's not actually on that list. And it, like, the list ends with, I think, with Neville's grandmother, who's mentioned 12 times. So he's mentioned in less than 12 times, actually.
That's what I'm trying to think of, like, when he is mentioned. Like, I know he's ice cream.
Yeah, he's really just mentioned in a third book. Yeah, as like giving Harry ice cream and helping him with his history of magic homework, and then
and then like the seventh when he disappears, right? The sixth, or the sixth, yeah, sixth.
And he might be mentioned again in the seventh, but I guess. And then it said also that he was supposed to be a bigger character. That's why she said the author set him up as like the this history buff in the third book, because initially her plan was to have him in the seventh book. I think her plan was for them to rescue him and then have him like lead Harry to the things like the Elder Wand and maybe even the Hallows, I'm not sure. But that storyline was scrapped. Like, there's this thing on Quora where someone that is Florian Fortescue is one of the victims of the author's ghost plots, the planned storyline that ended up getting scrapped.
That's really neat. I think I remember hearing about that. That's
all that went to Ollivander, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, I even went and checked. So I have the illustrated versions both from Mina Lima and the, who's the illustrator for the other ones? Jim Kay. And Mina Lima have the shop in their Diagon Alley thing, but Jim Kay actually doesn't.
Oh, interesting. And his is like huge.
Yeah, I checked
of Diagon Alley.
Yeah,
I mean, it's even at the Wizarding World of Harry Potter.
It is.
Let me just make sure. Oops, missed a water cup. Give me a second.
Those books are big.
Yeah, I have a lot of books. Just clear this up real quick.
I want to see where I okay. So remember that exhibit that we went to in New York? That was like the History of Magic exhibit. I wonder if that ghost plot was anywhere in any of those writings. Hold on, I'm gonna try to.
Yeah,
find.
For real, they had a lot of those.
Fortescue ghost plot. Oh, it's actually like on wizardingworld.com.
Oh,
like the author told us this.
Oh, what do you know?
Originally published on Pottermore in 2015, Florian Fortescue, owner of an ice cream parlor in Diagon Alley, is the subject of a ghost plot. A narrative that never made it into the final books. Harry meets him in Prisoner, where he finds out that Florian knows a lot about medieval wizards. Later, Harry discovers that an ex-headmaster of Hogwarts was called Dexter Fortescue. Florian is a descendant of Dexter, and this is the author talking. I originally planned Florian to be the conduit for clues that I needed to give Harry during his quest for the Hallows, which is why I established an acquaintance fairly early on. At this stage, I imagined the historically minded Florian might have a smattering of information on matters as diverse as the Elder Wand and the Diadem of Ravenclaw, the information having been passed down in the Fortescue family from their august ancestor. As I worked my way nearer to the point where such information would become necessary, I caused Florian to be kidnapped, intending him to be found or rescued by Harry and his friends. The problem was that when I came to write the key parts of Deathly Hallows, I decided that Phineas Nigellus Black was a much more satisfactory means of conveying clues. Florian's information on the diadem also felt redundant, as I could give the reader everything he or she needed by interviewing the Grey Lady. All in all, I seemed to have had him kidnapped and killed for no reason. He's not the first wizard whom Voldemort murdered because he knew too much or too little, but he's the only one I feel guilty about because it was all my fault.
Huh.
Interesting.
You know, who knew that a man who sold ice cream
could be so knowledgeable.
Could have such a history.
Could have such a potential
history. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really neat.
Also checked for his name because the way Florian is spelled is like unusual to me. Like, I'm used to the first name Florian. It's very common around here. But it's spelled with an I instead of an E. And I checked for Florian as a name. And I really just found it in, like, I guess in Romania, but also as a last name and not as a first name. So I figure it's just like a different version of the, to me, rightly spelled name Florian with an I. And I just checked what like the meaning of that is, because I thought if he was supposed to be a bigger character, there was probably a reason why he had the name that he did, as most of them usually do.
Got it.
And I don't think the first name really gives much, because it says, this is just Wikipedia. It says like, Florian is a male given name borrowed from the ancient Roman name Florianus. The name is derived from florus, from Latin, originally yellow, blonde, later flowering. And then it just said that like it would go on, like today people assume that it means flower, but it doesn't actually. Like they call it a popular etymology, which I guess means a popular but false belief about the origin or derivation of a specific word. So yeah. And it's like remains a common name in Austria, Germany, Switzerland, France, Netherlands, Belgium, and Poland. What it says here. And but I think the last name might be more relevant, because Fortescue is a British surname that originated from the old Norman epithet Fortescue, which I guess means strong shield. I would assume that that might have been like the idea to like, because he was supposed to give all that information, it might be that she chose that name as like a him, I don't know, him shielding something. I don't know. But yeah.
Interesting.
That's all I got on Florian Fortescue.
That's a lot. It's more than I would have expected there to have been. Like, dude serves up ice cream. Cool.
Yeah, I went down a rabbit hole on this one, because it was like Florian, it's spelled weirdly. And I also realized, like, in the German translation, they spell it the same way, even though we don't know that name here. But then I checked the French and the Italian one, and they change it to the I one.
Weird.
Yeah, so, but you know, the whole name changes thing in translations, it's odd sometimes. Yeah,
it's interesting.
One thing we love doing, taking ideas and making them real. That's what this podcast is, and we couldn't do this without a ton of help from amazing people. So when we started selling online, we found the perfect business partner. Yep, it's Shopify.
Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide.
Shopify grows with your business no matter how far or how big you grow. Thanks to an endless list of integrations and third-party apps, anything you can think of, from on-demand printing to accounting to chatbots, everything you need to revolutionize your business.
Shopify makes it easy for you to show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style with gorgeous, flexible templates and powerful tools.
And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers into buyers.
What we love about Shopify is how, no matter how much you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take your business to the next level.
Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere.
Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way.
This is Possibility, powered by Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/swishandflick, all lowercase.
Go to shopify.com/swishandflick to take your business to the next level today.
Shopify.com/swishandflick.
When you're shopping around for a wireless provider, don't you always think, what's the catch? Well, I heard for a limited time, all of Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. And I thought, what's the catch? But after I talked to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They don't have retail stores or salespeople, and instead, they deliver premium phone plans directly to you. All plans come with high-speed data, unlimited talk and text, and they're delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan, and you bring your phone number along with all of your existing contacts. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/swish. That's mintmobile.com/swish. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/swish. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And so Flourish and Blots. Flourish, this is also again from the wiki, it was a bookshop where most of Hogwarts students purchased their school books. And then the description in the first time Harry enters in the first book, it says they bought Harry's school books in a shop called Flourish and Blots, where the shelves were stacked to the ceiling with books as large as paving stones bound in leather, books the size of postage stamps and covers of silk, books full of peculiar symbols, and a few books with nothing in them at all.
We call that a journal, Harry.
And yeah, I guess they just like they're here for everything you might need in a book. They do book signings, as we see in the second book with Gilderoy Lockhart's event, and I think we see it at the end of the first Fantastic Beasts movie, right? Where Newt has like his book thing book that's signing, supposed to be also at, I think it's a signing as well. So, and I think that's supposed to take place at Flourish and Blots as well. And but they also struggle with some of the school books, so like the Monster Book of Monsters, obviously. But then when they're fighting the Monster Book of like the manager or someone is like fighting to get it out for Harry, they mentioned another book that was on the list, I guess previously, the Invisible Book of Invisibility, which like, and it says like, which cost them a great deal of money to buy and had gone missing immediately, basically, because it's invisible.
Oh my God.
And then I found this part that I just thought was funny because it's very Harry. There's like this line that says Hagrid almost had to drag Harry away from curses and counter curses, bewitch your friends and befuddle your enemies with the latest revenges, hair loss, jelly legs, tongue tying, and much, much more.
He's and gonna learn all like, that anyway. Let him have
it. And like what he says to it is like, I was trying to find out how to curse Dudley. This boy walked into the bookshop and he was like, that's what I'm gonna do here. But yeah, that's really all there is to do.
But I would love to be able to walk into Flourish and Blots.
Oh my God.
That is definitely one of the stores where like I wish that I could go there. And like I know that like what if they really if they like built this in Diagon Alley at the Wizarding World in Orlando or Hollywood. Well, Hollywood doesn't have Diagon Alley anyway. Like, I know that all they would be able to sell really would be, like, the books and stuff, but it would just be so cool, even if it was, like, just to take photos or get videos of, to, like, have them have built this bookstore, not necessarily fill it with books that you can buy, but just, like, almost have it as this, like, experience to go into, you know what I mean?
It'd be amazing.
Yeah. I would love that.
So cool.
I mean, even if they only can sell Harry Potter books, I mean, you could like have literally every single translation in there and you would fill it
that
up.
That would be cool.
Right away. And I mean, there's I'm assuming that a lot of international tourists come there as well. Mm-hmm. So you can also buy your own book.
Yeah. That would be really cool. And like some people collect all the different covers and stuff. Like that would be, oh man, that would be so cool.
Even if they just did like, even if they did Harry Potter's like book list, but just made them into like journals
Like, yeah, you could buy like the first set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Mina Lima's designed, or Mina Lima has released journals of some of the books that they've made the covers for,
like advanced potion making.
Yeah.
True.
Be cool.
And then what? It says here that the set for Flourish and Blots was a redress of the set for Ollivander's shop, I guess, in the movies.
Huh.
Wait, can you say that again? What was that?
Like, the set for Flourish and Blots was a redress of the set for Garrick Ollivander's shop, which reflects on the real world as shops on Diagon Alley would most likely have similar layouts due to set requirements, to space requirements, as a row of mini mall shops might.
Interesting. I want to pay closer attention to that now.
Yeah.
Have them side by side.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess they do both have a staircase.
We'll pull up the first movie on one device. We'll pull up the second movie on another device. Yeah, we'll play the scenes simultaneously.
Hmm.
Pause per frame.
That's really neat.
Aren't you doing a rewatch? You could do it then.
Oh yeah.
Marathon.
We have our marathon. Yeah. I was like, what are you talking about? Yes, you're correct.
Thank you for showing up today.
All right, so I'm gonna continue with quality Quidditch supplies because there's really not much on that one. It just says, like, for everything else, it's a store in Diagon Alley. It stocked many Quidditch related items such as quaffles, blood jars, broomsticks, and a Quidditch starter kit. Really the only other thing I found was that in Prisoner of Azkaban, Harry calls it his favorite shop. And then I also realized that we actually never see him buy anything in there. I also don't think we ever see him go in there. But we definitely never see him buy anything. And I checked that in all the books.
Interesting.
It's my favorite shop. I know nothing about it. I've
never been in there.
Well, he usually like mail orders things.
Yeah.
And then he gets brooms like given to him. Even
yeah, he doesn't buy his own brooms. And then I think from the fourth book onward, he doesn't actually... Like fourth and fifth book, Molly gets his school supplies. Yeah. And then the sixth, they just rush through everything. So I don't think they stop there. But I just thought that was interesting that he's actually never bought anything there, as we see
in
it.
In person, at least. Right. Yeah.
You can't and tell me he didn't go in there and buy like some, I don't know, Nimbus fan shirt or something.
Third year maybe.
Well, it does say like in the third book it does say like he stared at the, or I don't know if he stared at it as well, but like he goes to it every day and looks at the fireball, but he just can't like rationalize getting it because it's Nimbus 2000 is just fine.
I want that kind of financial control over myself.
Yeah. And at 13 too.
All right. It's pretty good.
So yeah, that's really all there is on quality Quidditch supplies. And then last but not least, I had the Leaky Cauldron, which exactly. So the literal German translation of the Leaky Cauldron is to the dripping cauldron. And I also saw that in the Italian it's the magic cauldron, but I just thought that was funny.
That was cool.
And then I also have the Swedish book, that one is the same, I think. I don't speak Swedish very well, so if you have any Swedish listeners, they might correct me on this. But
you speak it better than I can, so.
So yeah, the description for the Leaky Cauldron on the wiki is just, it was a popular wizarding pub and inn located in London. It was the entrance to Diagon Alley and indirectly Nocturne Alley. The rear of the pub opened up onto a chilly courtyard that contains the entrance to both alleyways. And then I guess it also said that the pub was built by Daisy Doddridge, the first landlady, in the early 1500s to serve as a gateway between the non-wizarding world and Diagon Alley. And then I checked where this came from. And I guess it's according to the Chamber of Secrets PC game. But I guess she has like a chocolate rock card and it says that on there. So it might have like popped up in other medium as well by now. But that was probably the first mention of it. and it had a bar, several private parlor rooms, and a large dining room. To Muggles, the pub appears to be broken down, old shop front on Charing Cross Road. This, however, was not the case prior to the imposition of the statute of secrecy. Prior to this, Muggle visitors were neither turned away nor made to feel unwelcome. And it also said that like it had to almost close when the with the imposition of the International Statute of Secrecy, Minister Ulrich Gamp permitted the pub to continue its existence as a safe haven refuge of members for the magical community. And they had to like really conceal it well. That's why we don't see it nowadays. But yeah, that was like, and then, oh yeah, it's that because he allowed them to continue to exist, even though they're technically, I guess, in Muggle London. It says, out of gratitude, the landlord created a brand new brand of beer, Graham's Old Gregarious, which tasted so disgusting that even with a 100 gallon incentive, nobody could finish a pint.
Oh my God. That's hilarious.
I love that.
What and a gift.
That's writing by the author on Wizarding World. So
who knew? That's like that's like man versus food. Like it's like a food challenge in the Wizarding World. If you can finish this pint, we'll give you
a t-shirt.
Get your name and picture on the wall.
Right. That's hilarious.
That's funny.
And like as a last point, I found that the road it's on, Charing Cross Road, is actually several centuries younger than the Leaky Cauldron itself. Like it wasn't created until the 18th century. So they had to like merge two older streets, I guess.
Very cool.
Yeah.
That is very
I learned
cool.
several new things.
I did not go that deep in my notes. Mine are like glossy and surface level. So Harry's first stop at Diagon Alley in his first year was Gringotts Wizarding Bank, because you can't get things without cash. And so there he encounters goblins for the first time. And that's where he hears Hagrid tell him that you'd be mad to rob it. And then he does later. So that's fun.
Jokes on you.
But also like, yeah, truly. But this trip is really key in him knowing, I guess, a lot about Gringotts, because like he talked to Hagrid about it, he was able to talk to Bill about it, and then the way that goblins like usually are with the treasure. So like whatever they create, anything that's goblin made, just because a wizard bought it doesn't make it actually that wizard's property in goblins' eyes. It still technically belongs to them, according to them. But anywho, after entering the bank and, you know, finding out what goblins are, Hagrid and Harry are taken down by Griphook into the vaults on a speeding cart. And there are many enchantments. And Hagrid feels very sick. Me too, Hagrid.
Me too. Hey, you rode this ride.
I did. I've only ridden it once. Felt fabulous, and I'm terrified to ride it again because I want to have a good experience and I don't want it to be tarnished with puke. So we'll see. But they stop at Harry's vault and they find out that he's rich, and they continue to go to higher security vaults, and that one is 713, where Hagrid picks up a tiny little grubby package and we find out that it's the Philosopher's Stone. Yes.
I found this really cool fact on the wiki that I wanted to share about Gringotts.
Go for it.
So the bank was created by the goblin Gringot. Like that's his name. I thought that was cool.
Oh,
makes
way
sense.
Back in 1474. And it says the creation of Gringotts was considered to be linked to the 14th century wizarding economic bubble, which happened the century before. It was established not long after the soap blizzard of 1378, a volatile event which burst the economic bubble.
Soap?
Soap?
Yeah, hold on. Let me click this. Okay.
If this has so anything blizzard. To do with Jacob's sibling, I'm walking out of the room.
Hold on. Get out. Wait, okay, so this is from the video game.
Which video game?
Philosopher's Stone video game.
Okay, I'll accept that. I'll accept that one. Classic.
And Hogwarts Mystery.
No, I'm out of here. Hold on,
no, peace. I'm out. No, done.
It's funny. Okay, hold on. The soap blizzard of 1378 was presumably a blizzard of soap that occurred sometime in 1378. This blizzard was followed by a burst of the 14th century wizarding economic bubble, and Gringotts Bank was established not long after. The 14th century wizarding economic bubble was taught to 5th and 6th years in History of Magic in Hogwarts Mystery. Binns later covered the soap blizzard of 1378 specifically to 7th years, and Professor Binns was giving a lecture on these events to a first year History of Magic class when he was accidentally interrupted by Harry Potter. That's from the video game. So like, it was mentioned in the video game like way before Hogwarts Mystery was a thing, and then they brought it back.
All right, that I can
So wait, it's a literal soap blizzard, and that somehow made an impact on the economy?
Yeah.
I don't... We're gonna move on.
Soap blizzard.
A volatile blizzard of soap.
Sure.
That led to an economic crash.
When I saw your notes on this, Stephanie, and it said Vault 713, I was like, wait, wasn't it 719? And then I checked my book. And it's like, so I guess in the first German edition, it was translated the wrong way. And it was 719. Oh. Then they changed it back.
Interesting.
Wow. Super interesting.
And I guess it was that stuck in my brain. Because I literally looked over. It was like, it was not 713 when I first read this book. I was like.
Huh. Interesting. The more you know. Let's talk about owls, baby. So Iolop's Owl Emporium. So Harry... his 11th birthday present, the snowy owl Hedwig. He gets there from Hagrid, and he later names her Hedwig because he found that name in a History of Magic. Shout out to Bathilda. But I thought that was cute because he's just like flipping through pages and finds something that he likes. So there's some information. Sorry, that was a very awkward long pause, but there's some video game information on the wiki about this as well. During the this is video game. During Christmas holidays in 1992, the owner of this shop has gone bird watching in Wales, so it was closed.
That's it.
Bird watching in Wales. And then we also see that in 1996, this is obviously not Harry's first trip, but Ron buys some owl nuts for Pig and Hedwig.
What about the rat tonic? Oh, that was the Magical Menagerie. Never mind.
Yeah, why would they sell rat tonic at Eolop's Owl Emporium?
Yeah,
I can't get over this soap blizzard. I want more information.
It's an emporium for Hooters only.
I'm picturing like all these wizarding folk grabbing like flaky like laundry detergent.
I just see mainstream swinging it everywhere.
Yeah,
Snope. It's snoping.
Nope. Yeah. That's a spell gone wrong. Something happened.
I think they could pop the bubbles.
Mr. Bubbles.
Like when you blow bubbles.
Yeah.
Just go out there.
Pop them. Okay. So back to Harry's first visit in Madame Malkin's. So he has to go and get some robes. This is in 1991. And after Hagrid tells him, hey, go get your uniform. I'm going to go do something else because he doesn't fit inside this shop. Because he is large and in charge. And he's also still feeling sick from Gringotts. So he goes to get 2 ice creams for them. And during this visit is Harry's first meeting with Draco Malfoy. If in case you forgot.
It was love at first sight.
Dreary forever. I actually don't enjoy that shit. So...
Why aren't they called Hako?
I think for obvious reasons.
Sounds like a type of shark. I just think of like a mako.
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 I thought you said a shark. Terrible.
Shark.
Shark. Got it. Okay. There's also another robe shop called Twillfit and Tattings.
Competition. But Harry,
what?
Competition.
Oh, competition. Yes. But this is a shop that is not visited by Harry Potter until he, like, they like talk about it in sixth year when Narcissus is all like, we'll be better suited to go to Twillfit and Tattings.
Ew.
Yeah.
We'll go ahead then.
Snobbery. And then we have Slug and Jiggers Apothecary. This is for potion ingredients in Diagon Alley. We actually don't see Harry go here. And I remember we did an episode many moons ago about the book, like, titles and then, like, some of the shop store names and where they're from. But I thought I would go into that a little bit more. So Harry doesn't actually, like, go in here, not that we see, but potion ingredients and things are ordered from them. So the etymology is, it's possible, and this is according to the wiki, it's possible that Slug refers to a mollusk, but is more likely a portion of a drink, typically alcoholic, that is gulped or poured. And a jigger is a liquid measure. It's 1.5 fluid ounces or 45 milliliters. The latter is often an apothecary's measurement. Yes.
So I like read through the school books and we talked just a tiny bit about the author's name, who is Arsenius Jigger. But shoot, what was I going to say?
Oh no. He or she ends up writing a Defense Against the Dark Arts book.
Yes, that's what I was gonna say. I was gonna say that they wrote the potions book for first years, but then, like, later on, the Defense Against the Dark Arts book that is required is written by the same person, Arsenius Jigger. And I thought that was interesting.
Branching out.
Right.
Getting it done.
It wasn't Maybe she sixth forgot. Year, was it?
Maybe.
Let me see. I can
because then it would have been both, like, by Snape.
Oh yeah, you're right. Let's see. It is third year.
No, it was it wasn't sixth.
Third year. The Essential Defense Against the Dark Arts by Arsenius Jigger.
Jigger.
So that was actually Lupin's book.
Getting jiggy with it. Oh, is it my turn?
It is.
Okay. Let's talk about the one, the only, the Ollivander's Wand Shop.
We just did the Ollivander's Experience the other day for the first time in a very long time, and it was fun.
We did. I was panicking the whole time I was going to get picked.
Oh,
panicking.
You've already didn't been happen. Picked.
I know. And that happened.
Yeah, but what are you going to do? Tell them no?
Yeah.
No. Would you have?
I don't know. I really didn't want to get picked that
day. She wouldn't have said no.
But it was the kid directly in front of me, so like I was standing in the spot where that man was gonna choose at that moment.
I thought he was gonna pick me, and then I got annoyed that he picked a freaking kid. Every time.
Megan, you're
listen that kid is not a part of the Harry Potter generation. Okay, I am the Harry Potter generation.
Oh my gosh. Open your arms to the new ones.
They're welcome, but that doesn't mean you don't get to pick people my age for the Ollivander's Wand Experience just because there's a freaking kid next to me. Like,
Have you been picked?
Yeah, a long time ago.
All right, calm down. I have not been picked.
Well, that's not my fault.
Maybe it's.
I don't think it existed things. Yet when I was there.
No.
Oh, really?
It may not have.
Their spring break of 2013. I think they may have.
Ollivander's would have been in Hogsmeade. They have an Ollivander's in Hogsmeade. It's just
Did they have that experience yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was very small.
It was very small.
They only have like one room in Hogsmeade, whereas in Diagon Alley, spoiler alert, they have about four. So it's much less of a wait to get it.
It's all of Ollivander's Alley. Associates.
Right. Though I realized the hallway that you walk down, all the doors are like hidden doors. So it just looks like you're walking through like stacks and stacks of wand boxes, but there's actually like four doors, but they're just like hidden in the bookshelves.
That's cool.
Yeah.
What was I going to say?
When did, now I'm 2013. I think it opened in 2012. Didn't
yeah.
It?
Because it was open for when you did.
Did
ECP.
You get to go to Hogsmeade?
Yeah, we did. Okay. We did the Hogwarts ride, the castle, and then we walked around Hogsmeade. I don't think there might have been one. No, there. I think that was pretty much the only ride at the time.
There would have been Forbidden Journey, Flight of the Hippogriff, and then the
that
Dueling
was the one
Dragons.
In the castle. Was that not the one in the castle?
Forbidden Journey is the one in the castle. Yeah, the Hippogriff one is that like little kid coaster next to the castle.
It's about 18 seconds long.
And then
I did that one.
And then the Dueling Dragons is like the racing coasters that like went upside down and everything. It was like Triwizard theme.
It was awful. It was awful.
Which doesn't exist anymore because that's Hagrid's, which is crazy to think about the fact that a Harry Potter ride has already been like flipped to something else. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
But yeah, Ollivander's did. So if you went to Hogsmeade, Ollivander's did exist there, but it kind of is like hidden. And also Ollivander's isn't even supposed to exist in Hogsmeade. So like, it's kind of weird that it's there.
It bothers me.
Mm-hmm. And the line at that, I'm assuming in 2013, the line was probably insane. So.
Yeah. There were so many people and it was spring break too. So it was,
yeah, it was packed. Yeah.
That was
I mean, I remember like when we went the first time, the wait for Ollivander's was like 2 hours just to go into that room and maybe get picked.
Yeah.
So
I will say though,
no, and we didn't spend the entire day at the Harry Potter part anyways, because the other people, I was there with my host mom, my host sister, and someone and a family friend, and I mean, my host sister doesn't really like Harry Potter. That's like her one flaw. She's perfect otherwise. it was like, yeah, we didn't spend it because there's like a Dr. Seuss part as well, right? And that was like her big thing. So we had to like split up the day into the different areas, I guess. But yeah,
Seuss
you're
Landing.
A good person.
Oh, Seuss Landing.
Only to be walked through, in my opinion.
Why, you don't want to eat at Circus McGurkus?
I didn't even know Dr. Seuss, like I didn't know what it was. So I was like just there and it's like, wow. What are all these things? And why is like
why is everything
are all
rhyming?
These things, truly.
What is like I didn't get the joke. I was just there like, okay. Yeah.
Well,
I do want to go back, but yeah. Haven't been to Florida since, so it's not exactly around the corner.
No.
And as we discussed, everywhere outside of Universal and Disney is just, you know, slowly becoming.
It's terrible. You know. Anyway, talk about Ollivander's.
I think dumpster fire was the term
you
used.
I did say dumpster fire. Ollivander's, makers of fine wands since 382 BC. Very nice. It was a tiny place, empty except for a single spindly chair, which later on Hagrid did break.
Aww.
Harry felt like he had entered a very strict library. And he describes it being like thousands of these narrow boxes piled right up to the ceiling. And from the book, for some reason, the back of his neck prickled. The very dust and silence in here seemed to tingle with some secret magic. I like that. Like, this place is just, I mean, 382 BC, like they've been doing this for so long. I think like the whole place just breathes magic.
Mm-hmm.
The current owner of the shop is Garrick Ollivander. I will never forget his name because I didn't know it for a trivia one time. So now I will always know it. He's described as having wide, pale eyes that shined like moons through the gloom of the shop. And right away, he knows who Harry is. Like, it's not a question. He just says his name. He starts talking to him about his mom and dad, and like it seems like they were just there. It seems only yesterday. And he starts telling him about their wands, and he later tells Harry how he has remembered every single wand he has ever sold. Can we talk about the non-consent of Ollivander just straight up touching Harry's scar though without asking him?
I think about that.
I don't like that.
It's like the first but not the last.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And then he goes on to apologize not for touching his scar, for saying he's sorry, to say that he sold the wand that gave him this scar. So then Ollivander asks Harry which arm is his wand arm, and Harry's like, I'm right-handed, which is like what my answer would have been, like I don't know. And he starts using this magical measuring tape, and it measures him shoulder to finger, wrist to elbow, shoulder to floor, knee to armpit, around his head, and between his nostrils. All very important measurements in getting a wand. So then he starts trying all these different wands. The first one is Beechwood Dragon Heartstring, 9 inches, nice and flexible, not a fit. The second wand is Maple and Phoenix Feather. Ooh, getting close. 7 inches and quite whippy. Nope, not for him either. The third is Ebony and Unicorn Hair, 8.5 inches and springy. Still not a fit. Like every time Harry grabs a wand, it is like quickly pulled away from him before he's given another one. And then they finally settle on Harry's wand, which is Holly and Phoenix Feather, 11 inches, nice and supple. And I had to look up what supple was, because like I generally know what it was, but I was curious like what the actual real life definition was. And it is bending and moving easily and gracefully or flexible. And I kind of like that for Harry, because you kind of have to be sort of flexible in a way to be Harry Potter, because your life's not going to go the way you think it's going to go. And then I pulled Holly from like the Pottermore article that has all of the different wandwoods. So this is like from Ollivander's little notes. Holly is one of the rarer kinds of wandwoods. Of course, Mr. Potter would have a rare wandwood, right? Traditionally considered protective, it works most happily for those who may need help overcoming a tendency to anger and impetuosity. At the same time, holly wands often choose owners who are engaged in some dangerous and often spiritual quest. Holly is one of those woods that varies most dramatically in performance depending on the wand core, and it is notoriously difficult wood to team with Phoenix Feather. Look at that, Mr. Potter, as the wood's volatility conflicts strangely with the Phoenix's detachment. In the unusual event of such a pairing, finding its ideal match, however, nothing and nobody should stand in their way. So, yeah, Harry's clearly destined for some real stuff.
Is Voldemort's wand also Holly? Or is it a different wood?
It is you. Okay. Which is also my wand wood. So he waves this wand, and a stream of red and gold sparks shoot from the end like a firework. Almost like a foreshadowing to Gryffindor colors, which is kind of neat. And Ollivander, of course, says, curious. And apparently, this is the phoenix who gave this tail feather, also gave another. And we find out that that is from Voldemort's wand. So they're twinsies. And then an important quote from Ollivander. The wand chooses the wizard, remember. And I think we must expect great things from you, Mr. Potter. After all, he who must not be named did great things.
Terrible.
Yes, but great. So Harry pays 7 galleons and he's on his way. Tiffany came up with a fun little thought. What other wand could have fit Harry? So I did what I normally do, which was kind of cool, because we're probably not going to do like a Harry Potter Felix Files like character analysis until like we're done with all the other characters. Yeah. So it was neat to kind of like do this part of that. So here's some that I came up with that may fit Harry. This one's kind of like, but I threw it in there. Possibly an ash wand. So this owner is stubborn, but certainly courageous, but never crass or arrogant. I think that is pretty Harry. Aspen, which is for the accomplished duelist or one destined to be so. They are suited for martial magic. I mean, he's pretty good at dueling. He thinks quick on his feet. Owners are strong-minded and determined, and more more likely than most to be attracted by quests and new orders. This wand is for the revolutionaries. You don't get much more revolutionary than Harry Potter. Cyprus, one of Ollivander's relative, Geraint Ollivander, wrote that he was honored when he would match a Cyprus wand because he knew he was meeting a witch or wizard who would die a heroic death. Harry did die a heroic death. He just also lived to tell the tale. And in current, less bloodthirsty times, Cyprus would find their soulmates among the brave, the bold, and the self-sacrificing, and those who are unafraid to confront the shadows in their own and others' natures. I actually really like this one for Harry a lot. Burwood is, quote, the survivor's wand. Ollivander's grandfather had sold 3 fur wands to 3 wizards who passed through mortal peril unscathed, and apparently fur is a very resilient tree.
Well, why did you drop the ball on that one? Garrick? Or no, right? Garrick.
Yeah.
Garrick.
Can we call him Gary Ollivander?
Mm-hmm.
Gary.
Solidified, yes.
Then there's Redwood, which is strongly attracted to witches and wizards who possess the ability to fall on their feet, to make the right choice, to snatch advantage from catastrophe. Harry is like very quick, especially under pressure. Diamonds are made under pressure, right?
Oh my gosh.
And then lastly, lastly, I picked you. You is also Voldemort's wandwood. So this is reputed to endow its possessor with the power of life and death. It can be best suited for those who are a fierce protector of others. And it's a found among heroes as often as villains, and it never chooses a mediocre or timid owner. So I think it's like, do I think it perfectly fits Harry? Yes and no, because it also does have a tendency to like fit very well with dark as well, but Harry could have gone down a dark path if he chose.
Yeah,
but I think Cyprus.
Yeah, if it's not going to be Holly, I also personally like Cyprus a lot. And I just think he would
sacrificing bravery.
I think it would always probably be Phoenix tail feather,
like fur, though.
Yeah,
that's true. But does he come out unscathed? His heart is like ripped to pieces and he's kind of messed up.
He died and came back. That's pretty survivorish.
He got better.
And then my last little bit, just for fun, just because I saw this, someone asked the question. So I was like, I'll ask my friends here. Do you think Harry would have gotten the same wand if he didn't have a piece of Voldemort's soul living in him? Like, did that play a role?
I do think he would have gotten a different wand.
You do? A different
one? Yeah, I do. I almost feel like the core called to him because of that. That's my take on it, though.
Maybe unicorn?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I could still see him having a phoenix feather and like, it'd be cool if it was foxes, but I do think that specific one did call to him because of the piece of Voldemort. I don't know.
That's like calls to like.
Yeah, kind of.
So it would be very coincidental to have. I mean, it is already like, it's very fated that they have the same one, right? I mean, they don't have the same one, but like only those two feathers, and they both have one of them. I agree with you. I would assume that he probably would get another one. I think it might still fit him, but it's
are
I mean doesn't he
still
like
gone? That's a question too, like does he have a family still, like all these factors matter.
Right, do you think Fox as like basically this immortal being, right? Do you think he like knew he needed to give these two feathers in order for like all this stuff to play out?
That's deep.
Like, why would a phoenix decide to give two?
It's true.
When they normally don't.
I don't know. That's interesting. And it also makes me, for some reason, it makes me feel like how the centaurs basically knew everything.
Mars is bright tonight.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like they just know. Interesting.
You know, sometimes my brain works.
Yeah. It's very good. I enjoy that question.
Does like the phoenix decide to give feathers, or can they lose feathers and just like have Dumbledore pick up like the two discarded feathers and give them to Ollivander because he's seeing something happening?
I'm so stressed that I'm molting.
Two feathers willingly given.
I feel like the birds gotta like want to do it. I don't know. Maybe they're not as magical if they're just like molted on the floor.
You can have my old dusty feather.
You can have this one that fell off my butt feathers.
Oh, my gosh. Oh man, good times.
Thoughts to think.
If any patron has an answer to that, or an answer to thinking if Harry would have had a different wand, I want to know. Let us know. Shoot us a message. We can talk about it on the next part two of this Felix Files.
Absolutely.
Yes. So what are we talking about next time?
Hold on. I just pulled it up because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't like stepping on any toes with my section. It is basically like going through the books and like the beginnings of each of the books and what happens in Harry's back to school type story.
Right.
So like the flying car, Aunt Marge, the Quidditch World Cup, the Dementors, the Burrow, you know.
Fun times. Just a little like throwback reminiscing at the beginning of the school year and how it's always messed up for Mr. H. Potter.
Well, I mean, he didn't have to like fly a car to school.
You're right. He didn't, but he did.
Well, he always goes from very zero dramatic. To 100. Yes, dramatic. Like this is the end of the world. There's nobody to contact, even though I could go to the freaking Leaky Cauldron. Calm
and he has an owl.
Down.
I love how McGonagall's like, I believe you have an owl. And Harry's like,
ha-ha. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I do have an owl.
But I couldn't get to school. That's how desperate he is to get away from the Dursleys. Just
but you know, that may be why. Well,
that bummed me out.
Oh, gosh. Well, thank you, Patrizia, for joining us. I and everybody else really appreciate it. You did great work.
Thanks for having me.
Great work at a late hour. Super impressed and proud of you.
Yeah. Listen.
Yeah, thank you.
And this mother is telling you to get some good sleep. Okay.
My mom tells me that all the time. So don't worry.
Good. Oh, well, thank you again. So more back to school shenanigans with Mr. Harry Potter and crew when we come back for part two of this series.
Yes.
That concludes this week's Felix File. Thank you so much for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.